Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast here on the No Direction Network. My name is Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Sparam, and this time you can hear me. And I'm joined by
Alexander Agunis, the Audible Gamer.
And?
You know, you stole my joke. I'm Vanessa Hoskins, something, something cute.
And we're also joined today by Mr. Thurston Hillman, Thirsty from Paizo, and an incredibly cute raccoon. Hello, Thirsty!
Hello. How's it going?
It is going fantastic. In fact,
I've turned it around already. I've started asking questions, and I'm the guest. All downhill from here, folks.
The podcast is now in control by Thirsty. We cede our authority. This is a bad idea.
This is the worst coup I've ever engineered. I could have thought a lot bigger sometimes, darn it!
But I like you folks. Speaking of coups you've engineered, why don't you tell everyone what your position is at Paizo, for those unfamiliar.
Hi, everyone. I'm Thurston Hillman. I am the Starfinder Society developer at Paizo, which means I am responsible for basically anything scenario related for Starfinder Society, whether it be assigning scenarios, outlining them, doing the development on them once the freelancer finishes with them, all that fun stuff.
Boons, metaplot.
Yeah. All that fun stuff.
Guide to role-playing game?
yes, kind of. I'm responsible for a bunch of that, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are we just adding things to his plate he's not familiar with? Like,
I mean, I could tell you a lot of other things that I'm responsible for, too. But, I mean, the list is very long.
High-level content, out-of-control adjectives.
1 hour of Thurston telling us all about his responsibilities at Paizo.
Oh, you do not want that. That is a dark road.
If you all have any other responsibilities you would like Thurston to be responsible for, you can tell us.
No, this is also a dark road.
We filmed this in front of a live Twitch audience. So throughout the episode today, if you have any comment or questions you want to ask of us or our guests, please just poke them into the Twitch chat and we will relay them to our guest. Now, Thirsty, this is when a certain little bit of news or scenario was released, you and Alex kind of engineered this episode from happening. So why don't you tell us about what is going on right now in the Starfinder Society that would be remarkable?
Yeah. So since Starfinder Society's inception as a campaign, we've done a lot of different experiments in the organized play world. And one of the experiments that we've been most proud of has been bringing in a lot of like player influence into our campaign. So you can see that with certain maybe throwaway lines that have suddenly become super important to our setting. We've done entire scenarios based off things that the fan base has sort of like gravitated and glomped onto, for lack of a better term. But along with that, when we started off, one of the key things we wanted to do with Starfinder in general was to make the Starfinder Society different than the Pathfinder Society in a lot of ways. Like, they're obviously very similar just based on the names and the general premise, but we wanted to make sure that the Society in Starfinder did have some noticeable differences, and one of those was we created this role called the First Seeker, which is sort of the elected leader of the Starfinder Society. Now, that doesn't say that they're responsible for everything the Starfinder Society does, but this elected leader, who is a known quantity, they're responsible for kind of setting the larger meta agenda. And for people who are familiar with organized play and how we've done things in the past with Pathfinder Society and Starfinder Society, really what the First Seeker is responsible for in Starfinder is kind of our season meta plot, or our like ongoing meta plot, because that gives us just like a really clean break point that we can play around with. And so the First Seeker, we wanted to have it tied in so that there's kind of a reason why every year or so, I mean, it could be longer, but let's say every year or so, the Society suddenly changed its direction. I mean, like, Pathfinder players is that, speak from experience. All right, we're fighting demons. Quick, now we're fighting in this like tournament halfway across the world. All right, now there's robots. Like, this is We wanted something that narratively could speak to that, and the First Seeker gave us that opportunity. So, how this all dovetails back into the original question, I swear I'm getting there, is at the end of September, we released two new scenarios, one of which was 2-07, Four for the First, which is kind of a quest pack-like scenario where we introduce four new NPCs, mm-hmm. who the players do a bunch of missions for. So they do one mission for each of these NPCs. And at the end of it, they kind of get a choice of, hey, you got to do all the stuff for these NPCs. Who do you think from these NPCs would be a good choice to take on that First Seeker role? And what makes that really interesting is that each of those four NPCs are actually player characters from the campaign that were translated over into the adventure based off some criteria we set up at the beginning of the organized play for Starfinder.
So cool. That's so very cool.
So each of these NPCs is actually a player character that other players are currently playing right now?
Yes, theoretically. I mean,
it's amazing.
You know, it's interesting too, because there's obviously some canny people out there, and I will not say that rules is intended and rules is written. Sometimes people monkey around with those. But I do know at least one of the four candidates, and I won't say who. Might just be entirely a GM credit, baby. which was a great reaction for me to find out. But yes, these are all characters who are active in the campaign. And I do not say GM credit baby is a bad thing. In fact, that just goes to show that, like, even GMs who aren't necessarily playing through all the scenarios but are still getting the credit, they still had this opportunity as well.
That's cool.
So, yes, they are all people who, like, they're all players in our campaign who have these characters, and these characters exist.
Cool. Man, that's so impressive, because, like, the requirements to be a candidate, like, you have to be pretty high level with a lot of specific boons, right, from specific chronicles.
Not specifically. I mean, one of the things that came up from this was the faction that kind of gave us the, like, opt-in boon, the capstone boon for the Second Seekers Luaziel Sebo faction. A lot of Season 1, because, going back to what I said, the First Seeker kind of determines the meta plot. That means that season had a lot of missions that were related to Luaziel Sebo. So there were a lot of extra reputation bumps for people who had already championed that faction. So we did have a lot of people who'd already kind of come in and had a bunch of reputation with Second Seekers Luaziel Sebo. But I'm not saying, like, it wasn't a feat. I mean, we only got, I want to say, around, like, 30 entries by the time we did the cutoff. So from the whole campaign, only 30 people had actually done the submission, and from that we did sort of a paring down to get our four internally.
How many were you expecting, out of curiosity?
I honestly had no idea what to expect. One of the things that we learned from this whole endeavor was getting a person to describe their character and their character's likely goals, if they were to, you know, have a whole season based around them, is really hard to do in 70 words. Mm-hmm. We also learned that some people will put the weirdest things into 70 words. Like, instead of telling us about your character, maybe you have told us about the drink that your character really likes and how to make that drink. We got some real interesting entries, and that has sort of informed us going into like future submissions. Like, hey, we're gonna maybe look at the text on that boon, update it a bit. Which kind of dovetails into another question I've got a lot, and I recently answered down at SkullCon when I was there. Which is, okay, well, you're doing this First Seeker thing. Obviously, you've had the first cutoff. What about other people who are still submitting? Well, one of the neat things that we're doing is, as of the start of Season 3, the next time we really do a big update on the guide, that sort of Rising Star boon is going to move to an all-factions boon. So it's now open for every faction to start emailing us their submissions, and probably with a higher word count so we can get more than your favorite drink. So that's some of, like, the transitory background and how, you know, how many we got and how we ended up getting them.
I mean, you are a connoisseur of drink. Does that, what did that drink sound like? It was appetizing.
It was called a dirty Yosoki, so I'm just gonna leave it at that.
Did you make a dirty Yosoki?
I have not.
Will you publish the recipe?
So one of the,
some people have different proclivities, you don't know.
So one of the really interesting things with this, and something that kind of came out of our out of all of our like reviews of these different characters and whatnot, was this idea that, hey, maybe they're not first seeker quality, but these people could be useful in other ways to the society. And so, hey.
Well, I was going to ask, before we get into the four that were selected and learning about them, mm-hmm. what were some of the more outstanding and using very liberal interpretation of the word outstanding examples that didn't make the cut?
Oh, there were quite a few. I don't want to go into too many specifics. Poor Pickle.
I know nothing about you.
I mean, yeah, there was a person called Pickle, which...
Pickle didn't make it?
Pickle did not make it. And if you were at the PaizoCon panel, you maybe heard someone who shouted out Pickle, who their character was named Pickle. And, like, part of this, and sort of touching on your question tangentially, Param, is, like, how we did this approval process. Because whilst Pickle the Yosoki was totally an awesome character and fits into that sort of setup of, hey, we could use this person for another thing, having our leader for a whole season be called Pickle might make some of our box text during those big interactive specials really awkward. Like,
oh, come on, that would be amazing. What shall we do?
Dirty jokes.
Wasn't Pickle like on a quest to establish a fast food chain?
Yes, which is beautiful, but also possibly throws us some curveballs. There was one particular entry which I'm really sad we reached out to the person because we really wanted this person's entry, but they just didn't get back to us, so sad. But one of the entries, like, would have kind of been just like this example of a really dark option. Of like, yeah, I have a vision for the society. I'm a Sheeran, but I'm also a Sheeran who's like the reverse of everything Sheeran stand for. We're going back to a hive, and the best place to start is a unified society. And we're like, whoa, this is dark and has implications. So like, those were some like cool, but like to put that in with the group that we ended up selecting kind of was this interesting option, because it showed like, yeah, some people have some pretty radical out there ideas. And then of course, like along with that, which was a good option in Pickle, obviously, there were just like a few that hit on a lot of strong beats, but maybe weren't right for a whole season based off of them. Maybe fit too well into other archetypes. Maybe, you know, as oftentimes comes up, like, hey, we're doing something internally that hasn't been announced yet that maybe really veers into this territory. So, or as a warning to everyone listening who will one day submit their characters for this thing, had an IP infringing name that we totally couldn't use. So just like, whilst it's cool to have your character, you know, who maybe you're riffing off another concept, when you're submitting it for a publication purpose, try not to take from like other media and like take the exact name. That was something that came up, and like, it was funny because at the time it was John Compton when he was still on the team and myself who kind of went through an initial vetting process with Tanya involved, and like, luckily, I knew the media for that character, and I'm like, oh no, oh, denied. But, like, other people in the office might not have caught that, so it goes with our usual caveats on, like, Easter eggs are bad, so on and so
forth. Now, I think it's time we become introduced to our four potential for Seekers. Tell us about the candidates, yeah. Thirsty.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Obviously, oh, Pickle.
Hold on.
Oh.
We are having an audio issue. For some reason, your microphone is crackling like crazy, Thirsty.
It really is.
Mine?
Yeah, it just started.
One sec.
I had assumed he might know what causes it. Dramatic pause. Loud beep, which is cool. I want that as a sound effect so that we can bleep out everybody's Wes Snyder's.
The other problem is that it's raining here right now in like rain hail, so.
Oh.
Super fun. Not really super fun.
Okay. Well, we will make do.
Hopefully it's a bit better. Hopefully it's a bit better.
Yes, it is not actively trying to corrupt the internet.
Oh, well, that's good. Yay.
All right, so our first Seeker candidates.
Yeah, so our first candidate that we have on the list, I'm going to go in reverse order because, you know, that's fun, was Ehu Hadif, Ko'ar Amaris of Clan Talar, but Ehu Hadif is generally the abbreviated term of this this male Kasafa, who really exemplifies a lot of the core philosophies of being a Starfinder.
Okay.
So a lot of, hey, we want to maybe look back at past events. We want to do research on things that have happened. Like very, very much someone who is interested in hitting the books, finding out things that maybe we haven't fully explored, going back and exploring those. In fact, their particular quest has him sending the PCs on a mission to essentially hit up a place that we've barely hit on in the main campaign, but people really liked and wanted to see more of. So that kind of approach, and really having a more grounded like future vision for the society of getting back to our roots of, you know, doing our research, exploring areas, finding out what we can, and then cataloging that and bringing it. And I think Ehu really speaks to a lot of the players out there who that's kind of what they're wanting from the campaign. Like they're really like archaeologists in space, but hey, we're more than just kicking down doors. Like there's a bit of like planning and preparation and so forth. So that character really just stuck out to us as like in a lot of ways, like this is a really safe option. And this is the character who like when you're looking at an election, like, well, they probably aren't going to take us into a war with, like, the giant army of space bugs.
Probably. So,
probably, right? None of so, those. Yeah,
they
yeah.
sound, like, most likely to be the monologue background of a heist scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So that is Ehu, who I think is, again, kind of that sort of bedrock candidate. You know what they're about pretty quickly from when get to interact with them. The next one, already online I've seen has maybe stirred some controversy, and that's Terra Nova. And Terra Nova is a vidcaster, which has been a very popular trope for a lot of like characters in Starfinder in general. Someone who like streams their exploits and is very much sort of in that like forefront of like pop culture and really embracing pop culture, but also has this other streak to her of people who've messed with the society, such as like our antagonists from season one, the Jinsels, really still haven't suffered enough, and we need to make sure to continue kicking them so they know not to mess with us at all ever again.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Wow.
And again,
organized
like,
crime ties, or no?
Not even organized crime. Just more of a case of, hey, this is an NPC who very, very much like was involved with what happened in season one.
Mm-hmm.
Very much was kind of like impacted by what happened in season one with the Jinsels and the Scoured Stars, and mm-hmm. hasn't quite let that storyline necessarily go yet. Okay. But as well, like, also wants to strengthen the society's ties with a lot of like media enterprises and organizations, which we kind of see that playing into season two a lot already. So with her, that sort of rolls in some of that story as well. And where she would take the society could be a very interesting direction. And again, like, there's a lot of people out there who we've seen it in the past of, if we let this problem like go or let it fester for a while, then it grows and in three seasons comes back and kind of like bites us again. Cough, Aspis Consortium. So this is kind of that like player driven aspect of that of like, no, we have to make sure that they are fully dealt with. And so, again, a different type of character than what we've seen in the past, which is perfectly sort of mirrored by the character of Eivor Stelek, who is a male Hilki. Hilki being the red-skinned humans from Akaton.
Oh, okay.
And Eivor is this charming swordsman, swashbuckler, lover, dancer. I believe this particular character stood out to us because one of the things in that 75-word description, I believe, started with like, scientist, period, space, swordsman, period, space. And so we read that and we're like, oh, one of these. But then there was like this interesting element to Eivor that we found, which was this NPC who was like completely not okay with the society getting all cozy with all of these media enterprises, like didn't like that we were, you know, putting our agents on reality TV all the time and and like not really supporting our new agents. Cause like the Scoured Star stuff, we needed to get a bunch of new agents and kind of send them into the meat grinder right away. Cause stuff was serious. Eivor wants us to go back to maybe looking after our new people a bit, and his quest in particular kind of takes some storylines we've seen in the past, especially with that sort of multimedia side, and puts a darker twist on them. And okay, how do we deal with that? And that's really where Eivor stands out as a candidate. And that brings us to our fourth and final candidate, Kaldur Soren, who has also generated quite a bit of buzz online because Kaldur Soren is a Morlemah, which is a four-tusked walrus person who also has John Lennon glasses on, so that's like earned them triple points somehow. And Kaldur Soren takes the election very seriously and is putting together a campaign to win and is in it to win it. But Kaldur Soren is also someone who thinks that we kind of need to focus our future efforts on reestablishing the Starfinder Society after the Scoured Stars recovery and getting us back out into like near space in the vast, in particular setting up new lodges, like finding those lodges that we abandoned and getting those back online. And in fact, that fits into the quest that you do for Kaldur Soren.
Okay.
And so, along with being a walrus person, which people seem to like for some reason, along with that, those are kind of the four candidates that we have on our docket. And it's really, really interesting to see where things are going to go.
Yeah, it sounds pretty great. They all just happen to have this great medley of goals that are kind of connected, but kind of opposite each other, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like most Starfinders. I mean, you will have Starfinders at tables who will have different ways of presenting themselves and handling themselves. Mm-hmm. And like, though most Starfinders want the same thing, how they get there can be radically different.
Yeah, and that's true.
One of the things I wanted to ask is like, these goals that you have spoken of are going to actually affect the direction that season three goes in, right? Whichever one gets elected.
Absolutely. So the way that the voting works, and I am a bad person and don't have the dates directly in front of me, but I believe mid-November is when the voting comes to its end. We give about two months of worth of voting for people to play the scenario and then make their choice and then vote online.
Maybe through the end of PAX Unplugged?
I don't know the specific... See, I just said I don't know the specific date. Now you're putting me on date timers.
Gosh. I mean, I'm just hoping. I'm just hoping. That's when I get to find a chance, to play it, so... For selfish reasons.
Fair. No, it will definitely be before PAX Unplugged.
Sorry. Okay.
But that being said, we're trying to give people like the 2 months necessary. And the reason we're only able to give that much is because come like December, January, that's really when we're starting to focus and sit down and do our outlining for season three. Mm-hmm. Like one thing that I announced starting at Gen Con this year, which I was particularly proud of on the Starfinder side, was all of season two is outlined. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've already assigned out to February's batch of scenarios and am now looking to get the remaining batch out in the next few weeks Hey, here's all of our authors have their stuff assigned.
Let me just refresh my email really quick.
Yeah, you should. But that being said, it means that we're kind of in this weird like holding pattern where once these outlines and everything are done for season two, before we can start diving into all the season three stuff, we need to figure out how this election plays out. Because, yes, the first seeker that gets decided from this vote will shape the story that season three takes. Obviously, we have a lot of cues internally that we want to follow up on, but having sort of that first seeker direction doesn't necessarily preclude us from having some other events going on at the same time. So whilst the focus will be on what the First Seeker wants to do with the society, there can be events and other things going on that can inform that season. So.
About what percentage of the season do you think will be dedicated to the new Seeker's goals?
I think we generally do a larger percentage based on the First Seeker's goals that sort of ties into that meta plot. So whatever the new First Seeker is, you'll probably see comparable to what we've done with the Second Seekers in the past, that sort of level of focus on those story arcs. And then even the non sort of faction missions will probably focus a lot on that, because whilst the society's goal changes, we could have, say, Calder Soren wins and we want to go out and start establishing new lodges places. Well, there's probably some like Exoguardian missions that could revolve around that same concept of going out and grabbing a lodge, but it's an Exoguardian focused thing. It doesn't necessarily always have to be, or it could be like a two faction mission. And I think very similar to what you saw in season one in terms of sort of breakdown for meta plot, not meta plot, that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. That's exciting. That means there'll be a lot of good juicy stuff with whomever the society votes in for their new First Seeker. That's really exciting.
Exactly. And I mean, when I came into this role way back when, and we were concepting Starfinder stuff before the game was even out, this was one of the things we really wanted to push and focus on.
Go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, so what happens to the candidates that you don't pick? Do they get sent to Professor Willow's lab in exchange for a few Starfinder candies?
Well, I mean, they're characters in the society, and they can continue playing. But also, it is very likely, now that we have art for those characters, maybe we'll do something with them, too. That's one of the cool things of, like, throwing out some art for some of these. Having mentioned some of the other candidates, it's also interesting that we also now have systems to get like DocuSigns for NDAs and like, and releases for, you know, IP, so that we can do stuff with that character and not fringe, all that fun legally stuff. But basically we could do that with any of the Capstone people and create those agreements. So I'm really excited to really make this feel like a living campaign. I know Tanya has some apprehension, but I'm really really looking forward to, like, whoever wins this could be the First Seeker and then show up at Gen Con during the special with their character. Mm-hmm. Then I can drag them up on stage to read the box text that the First Seeker has to read.
Absolutely, yes.
And then they die in that adventure.
I mean,
that is part of Tanya's trepidation. Yes, what happens if they die? And I'm like, man, that would be a really cool plot development, which we could do like a whole great big blog and news article on.
You have for every single step of the mission, you have an alternate text. If they died at the table.
But it's cool things like that that I think really help grow organized play and kind of keep it fresh. I mean, I mm-hmm. come from a background of we were talking about like World of Warcraft before the show started. Yeah. I mean, I love a lot of those kind of events where it's, you know, a lot of people working together to accomplish something. And I think when you start creating like personalities and you feed back into the community as much as the community is feeding into the storyline, it becomes this constant cycle that allows the game to keep going and keep being fresh. Now, that's not to say that like I'm just going to riff off what fans are giving me. Another thing when I started was I came in with kind of like a 5-year vision for, all right, this is kind of the high note of what I want to do with each season. So I've always had that in the back of my head, but bringing in those sort of player elements, I mean, season one, very much the Scoured Star storyline, but all that stuff with Strawberry Machine Cake probably wouldn't have happened if people didn't glomp onto Strawberry Machine Cake. So it's sort of a give and take in terms of information.
I mean, absolutely. My local society groups have basically turned the game into a dating simulator in support of Ziggy.
Fair.
Oh my gosh.
So this is going to be really hard to top. Like, do you already have plans and machinations as to how, like, what to do that could possibly have this level of player interaction and influence in the future?
Yes.
What answer was I expecting?
Well, would you like
I will
to
say
elaborate
that this
on
is,
that?
I don't think he's allowed to elaborate 1 inch on that.
This is the first step in a multi-step pyramid that I'm trying to build. Mm-hmm. Along with, obviously, the people in the org play team. So, I mean, like, I've kind of hinted to Tanya at some of these ideas, and she's like, one step at a time, and I'm like, oh, yes. But what glorious steps we'll be taking. Yeah, no, absolutely. This is kind of just us more and more testing the waters with some of this interactivity. We saw it again with some other stuff like the ethics and anthropology with the Izzelgun stuff that happened several months ago, where we kind of did a terrible social experiment on the community in which during a specific scenario, the players had the option of selling out a species in order to make money, or they could choose not to sell out the species and get no rewards or extra rewards for doing so. And luckily, it seems our player base was mostly good people, so they didn't all sell out this species, which made it really nice when we posted the follow-up article that's like, oh, and this species will now be an always available race. Mm-hmm. Because you were good people. We were really looking forward to the other option of hope you enjoy your 700 extra credits. You'll never play this species in the game. But luckily we didn't have to do that. Again, these are all sort of steps that were taken.
That's funny.
Well, I'm glad these experiments are working out because the other possible answers I was really hoping for was, no, this was a mess. We're never doing this again. Absolutely not. Everything will be pre-written. We cannot trust you horrible, chaotic players with anything.
I thrive in chaos. Like I'm someone who adapts to getting a curveball thrown at me and then kind of mm-hmm. running around it. I mean, yes, there's a lot of like planning that has to happen in advance, but overall I would rather revel in the chaos.
We do have a question from Numbat18 from the chat. They want to know if the Starfinder Society is a pyramid scheme.
No. It is absolutely not a pyramid scheme. It is just a place that gets you to perform services for them in which they profit off of those services and you receive a portion of the profits that you earned for them. It's really entirely different.
Oh, come on. That's just American corporations.
Shh. Yeah. That is kind of true. Although being a Starfinder is very risky. You mm-hmm. risk life and limb every mission, but it pays really well.
Does. It absolutely does. And one of the things we've done more and more is, like, in missions, generally speaking, if there's, like, some horrible, like, absolutely awful thing that could happen and crush your character and is not something you should have maybe been prepared for, like, we might have the society cover those costs. There have been at least 3 or 4 scenarios I can think of, like, and if the PCs, like, manage to contract the, like, chestburster alien, don't worry, the society will pay to have it extracted, assuming they can make it home without dying. Like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Wow, that's way better ethics than the Pathfinder Society.
I mean, it really is. Pathfinder's like, do you have your prestige? Come on.
Come on, you have to grease my palms.
When I was originally pitching Starfinder Society and how they should play it to my normally Pathfinder Society local gaming groups. One of the pitches I did was, unlike the Pathfinder Society, it seems most people are happy when you show up. Now, speaking of changes in Season 2, how has that changed, Thirsty?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Season 2. Oh, boy, oh, boy. You know what? I can talk about Season 2 a bit. I have things I can talk about here. So Season 2 kind of... starts off with Season 1 is over and we've gone to the Scoured Stars and we've done the thing, and spoiler alert, we win. And when we win, everything is great and we come home. And when we come home, the Pack Worlds is suddenly filled with all of these multimedia like campaigns against the society. Like every sort of bad, like political advertisement or like takedown commercial is now being pointed at the society. And throughout Season 2, we're really figuring out where that's coming from. And I'm pretty sure several canny players who've been playing through the Season 2 plot already have a real good idea of one particular NPC who might be super involved with all of that stuff. and so with Season 2, we wanted to really play with something that had been a like well-received part of Starfinder, which was kind of that social media aspect, and something that has personally bothered me as someone who played a lot of Pathfinder Society and then like writing the grand epic of Season 1, or doing the outlining and all of the story arc stuff for that. I mean, individual writers wrote it, they're amazing, but like kind of coming up with hashtag the vision for Season 1, by the end of it, like I had always sort of equated it to Mass Effect, like, all right, we're gonna go fight the big alien menace, get all our buddies together, go bop the thing in the face, yay. But going back to what I also find really disconcerting about every year of Pathfinder Society is, like, oh boy, we have, like, this paramilitary organization that can mass an army at, like, the drop of a hat, and no one has problems with this. And, like, even partway into Season 1 is kind of a throwaway reference after the mid-season special. There's this point of, like, well, the Pack World Council doesn't want to get involved with the Scoured Stars. The Starfinder's like, well, nuts to that. We're going to go do it anyways. Yeah. And so, obviously, people are going to be like, okay, like, seriously, you have fleets of starships, and you just went and beat the butts off another alien civilization. Like, there's a lot wrong with this picture. And, like, the Starfinder's then coming back and being like, but no, totally, we're the good guys, and having to explain that and showcase like things that they do that are good, while also kind of scrambling a bit to make sure that things that maybe they do that aren't too good don't come to the media's attention. And so a lot of Season 2 is kind of dealing with that. And it also gave us this opportunity that was really fun to hit on a bunch of tropes that we haven't still hit on, and a bunch of sort of neat concepts that are, because of our level range in Season 1, we couldn't say hit on those. So people want some fun spoilers. I think we should talk some fun spoilers.
Let's do that.
Let's talk some fun spoilers. So already for October, we have our two scenarios coming out that were just the product pages recently came up. 209 Blue Rise Breakout, which is written by Jason Tondreau, who recently came onto the Starfinder team as our developer, came from the editorial side. Mm-hmm. I kind of equate this to a very Shadowrun-esque scenario, which based on the title, you go into this place called Blue Rise, which exists. You should go look it up in the Pack Worlds. And you have to break out, and Blue Rise is an office complex. So,
oh, interesting.
And it is a tier 1-4, ties into some of our ongoing storyline very heavily, but is a different kind of scenario in terms of what you can expect to see from like a first level party, and really sort of keeps the players on edge very well. Scenario that is coming out is actually a quest pack called Corporate Interests, which I really made because, going back to Pathfinder, things that annoyed me for like the first 2 years that I started at Paizo and joined like the organized play meetings, when we would talk like Pathfinder, especially as we're doing Pathfinder 2 and planning out factions and stuff, Tanya every week without fail would ask the question, where does the Pathfinder Society get its money? And so before the Starfinder Society was even created, I headed that off at the pass and had some write-ups. And Corporate Interest goes into that. It's a quest pack that we're working on, finishing up dev on now, that is basically five quests that are, the society does odds and ends for different corporations in the Pack Worlds. And so each of the quests corresponds to a different corporation. So you'll see some names that people have seen before, like Sandoval Space Flight Systems, which is the people who designed the Sunrise Maiden from the Adventure Path. You'll see Resurgent Technologies, which is an Abalonian firm that's popped up. Frozen Trove, which is another kind of like organization we've used a bit in Starfinder Society as sort of an antagonist corporation. Abadar Corps, a really big one. And Arabani Arms, which is a drow weapons manufacturer. And those quests are each meant to be standalone. And we're kind of finalizing some of the rules. We might all, in this, look at changing up how we do our quest packs as opposed to being like one standalone thing. We might try to break those out and let people have some other options. Nothing's final yet on that, but we're excited for that because really it's a showcase of quests that are, hey, the Starfinder Society has all of these people who kind of work in a paramilitary organization that's totally not a paramilitary organization. They probably all have some skills that we can, you know, farm out to these corporations who need skilled individuals to do, like, weapon tests, protection duty, and that sort of informs where the society gets a lot of its money from.
With the weapons test, we're on behind the weapon, right? Not in front of it?
Sometimes
I can answer that because I wrote that quest and the answer is both.
What about other skilled labor? Like, I'm sure scientists will want to get some field research from our scientists. We got lots of people with the life sciences and all that stuff. So,
well, we often hear people who maybe don't like all of the different Starfinder Society base frames, the Drake and the Pegasus. So maybe you'll test out a new one with Central Flight Systems and like, hey, maybe you'll get to have some feedback and say, hey, this is what we want our next starship to be like. And that sort of thing, which is going to fit in. And that quest pack, I am going to be a good person. And those quests are written by a couple in-house people and a couple other people. We have, for people who worked on that quest pack, it was Diego Valdez from Paizo, as well as Sam Fallon, both from customer service. And then Joseph Blomquist and Emily Parks wrote the two others, and then I wrote the fifth one. So, yay! So those are the two that are coming out this month, but people know about those. Mm-hmm. I kind of blabbered on a bit. Let's talk some juicy spoilery stuff. All right, so in November we hit 2-11, which brings back tried and true tested author Larry Wilhelm, who is renowned for sending in maps that make me weep and pray that the cartographer can have those maps be anywhere as good as what Larry sends in. He's doing a scenario called Descent into Verdant Shadow, which will take us to one of the jungle ice wells on Abalon. And we're going to go into a big impact crater that has the jungle inside it and do some fun exploring there.
Awesome.
Which is pretty cool. It is an important scenario, and I will suggest everyone give it a shot. It's looking really good. And then that's going to bring us to 2-12. Colossus Heist, which originally was named Kaiju Heist, but we did decide to change it a bit. And this scenario is I'm excited for because it's going to be written by Paizo's own Amanda Hammond.
No, I'm excited.
Wait, are the Demai or the Demai in it?
It takes place entirely on the planet of Daimalco. And answers the question of if the Starfinders lost something really important, and that something really important got eaten by a mecha kaiju, and we needed to get that something back, how would we go about getting that something back that involved riling up another kaiju to fight it so we could go inside it? Just saying.
The society is the best part of Starfinder.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Yep. What even?
Yes.
You madman.
Yes.
This reminds me of the one where we found out the continent was alive.
I'm just saying, we, as I said, this season lets us do some real off the book. And both of those scenarios that I just mentioned feature, like, I won't say they're meta plot intensive, but each of them like add into our ongoing meta plot and story. I'll hit some high notes on some other unannounced stuff, I should say. December brings us into another. Colossus Heist will be a tier 7/10, which again that higher level lets us get to those points. In December, we're going to have Storm of the End Time by Nicholas Wasko, which is taking us back to one of the planets mentioned at the end of our first quest pack, Into the Unknown, the sort of stormy basalt planet of Wheel Dryad, which was mentioned in like a one sentence description. And now we're going to go and explore that place. So who knows what could go there. And then 214 is our first tier 9/12 scenario at the end of the year. And that is called Data Purge. And essentially, without giving any major spoilers, the PCs are tasked with breaking into the Lorespire complex and doing some stuff. Yes.
Could it be interesting problems with guidance?
I will not confirm or deny. That then brings us into January, which has a tier 1/4, the Infernal Gallery, that's being written by Jessica Catalan, which is a totally weird swamp that appears in the drift and has this decrepit mansion on it, and the PCs end up having to go check this out after a salvage barge finds some stuff on it that is pretty interesting and also maybe has to do with hell. And then that brings us to 216, the second January scenario, which is a tier 5/8 called A Scoured Home by Christopher Wasko, which takes us back to the Izzelgun homeworld and follows up on what they've been up to and maybe ties back into some of season one stuff and some kind of follow up on what's gone on there, and also is a Second Seeker's Jadnura mission for those people who maybe forgot about Jadnura. He's still around, has some interests, and so that'll be an interesting scenario. And that brings us to the sort of last two that I can talk about, which are our February scenarios. First one is the tier 3/6, 2-17, The Cost of Living, which deals with medicinals and like an ongoing crisis with medicinals in Starfinder, and was a very interesting scenario conceptually because it's going to tie into some stuff that we actually worked with the design team on quite a bit, and will be a systemic change to Starfinder that I think is going to happen around the same time. So super cool.
Are we finally going after Big Potion?
This will be definitely a Big Potion scenario. Yes.
Fantastic. And who's
absolutely
who's writing
that? Andrew Mullen.
Andrew Mullen. Okay, cool.
And that brings us to 2-18, the last one I can talk about, which is Forbidden Tides. And for Forbidden Tides is a tier 7/10. It's written by an author some people out there may know, one Kate Baker, who shunned me many times on getting more society work because she's big and important in writing those APs now. But
she can do both.
But when I threatened her that I've got a Morlamoth scenario that I gotta write, and it'd be a shame if you couldn't take it. She jumped. She was there. She was ready to write this one. And Forbidden Tides is a is an Extra Guardians mission. It is a Tier 710 that brings us back to the planet of Arnacel. And one of the interesting things that we wanted to touch on with the Morlamoth story was, so we had this pretty like orderly species who has just kind of been introduced the last 2 years to, you know, this, the interstellar life and traveling to other planets, and tons of Morlamoths have suddenly become Starfinders, and we have all this stuff going on. It'd be really interesting to go back to their homeworld and see the impact on that. And like, maybe some people in their homeworld have been not only interested in like, hey, the history of other species, but then digging into their own history, and that history might not all be underwater sunshine and rainbows. And Forbidden Tides will touch on that and be very interesting for people who are curious to learn more about like Morlamoths and Morlamoth history.
Yeah, great.
Awesome. Nice.
Right. So
yeah, and so that's kind of my like bird's eye view of what we have coming up for season two. And then, of course, we will have like four. Well, a whole bunch more scenarios. We will have March, April, and May scenarios to announce in the future.
All right. Now,
quick question. Do you anticipate ending the season at the Origins Game Fair again? Or do you think it'll be another like season and a half? How do you think that's going to shape out this time?
Intent this year is that our final season two scenario will launch at PaizoCon. So in May, okay. 2-24 is going to be our kind of final season two scenario. That will then transition into 3-00, which will be the launch or the launch interactive special at Origins. And we've sort of switched it up with Starfinder, and we found that this has been working out pretty well, is using the season, like the interactive specials, more as like season enders than season openers, just because it makes way more sense for us to end a season with like a big group of people doing a thing.
And for it those builds of you up been... to that, it builds up like plot wise of all this anticipation that you finally get to do the big thing rather than, oh, this big thing happened and we're cleaning it up.
Exactly, and yeah. I'm super excited for season two for this, because if you noticed, like, season two deals with, like, a lot of media and a lot, like, what kind of interactive special can you tell with that? Oh boy, will that be fun. So yeah, that'll be 3-00, and then we'll start season three at Origins with our launch affairs, and maybe we will have some extra surprises, coming down the pipe to announce for that. Nope, can't say anything here, but keep your ears to the ground or in the skies or whatnot.
All right, speaking of conventions and appearances, are there any last conventions you're going to be at this year that people might be able to meet you at Thursday?
So I'm kind of on convention hiatus for a bit. There's a couple coming up that we're sort of finalizing travel arrangements on, and then I will know. It's kind of this the odd time of year because we're actually now just at the end of convention season. I kind of, I always personally consider SkullCon as sort of that end for me, that September. But there'll be a couple coming up, and then obviously you'll be able to catch me at the usual PaizoCon, Origins, Gen Con as they hit. PaizoCon, I'll be running undoubtedly I will have written and be running part three of the Perplexity series, which is my ongoing thing, which I run at conventions now. So
nice.
Okay. Wonderful. All right. So anything else you want to shout out to? Anything else cool going on?
Oh boy. Well, the Attack of the Swarm AP has been coming out. I have an adventure in that. In fact, it's my first Starfinder adventure path adventure, which is number 5, which is takes place entirely in a mindscape, which is, let me tell you, that's an interesting thing to write for, because how do you do treasure in a mindscape? Who knows? Well, we found out a way.
Did you know?
We did, and it was pretty cool. Okay. But yeah, so that is Hive of Minds. I wrote that, and goes into some pretty wacky, interesting stuff. So yeah, I'm excited for that. Obviously, Four for the First, something I didn't mention was the person who wrote Four for the First was me. And the reason for that, I mean, all sorts of, I'm amazing aside. No. The reason was that was not something we really wanted to put a freelancer on. Sure. Because on the off chance one of the candidates got upset at how their character was portrayed. People can be mad at me. I want to keep our freelancers safe. But yeah, so Four for the First was something that I wrote. And then I also will have a quest in the upcoming corporate interest quest pack. So that's a whole bunch of stuff for me. Oh,
I'm imagining a freelancer protection program for Paizo.
Sometimes it's needed.
We shuffle you off to a new city, give you a new name, but you have to write under that new name for Paizo from then on.
Oh,
yeah. Just, wow. Sometimes it's needed. Just ask Ryan about scenarios with colossal creatures, and he'll tell you all about how we need a freelancer protection.
Right. So yeah, that's all been what I've been working on. On a personal level, I'm starting to get into Pathfinder Second Edition. So I have not been able to really participate in PF2 because I've been so busy trying to, again, do all that outlining stuff for Starfinder Society. But I've finally been working on it, and I'm actually putting together my own home campaign for a little place called Druma that I have no interest in. Gonna do some stuff there.
Nice.
You also have a podcast that appears on Paizo's official channel.
Mm-hmm.
What
podcast that appears on
an actual play podcast?
Oh, Punch and Crawl. Yeah. So I am actually no longer the GM for that show.
Oh, no.
I had to, after Gen Con, just with a lot of the team changes that we've had going on, I've kind of stepped back from GMing that. Current cast is still BB Wolf. She's doing an excellent job. They were actually supposed to start tonight, but couldn't. The technical difficulties, they couldn't. But I believe next Wednesday, they're also going to be starting their new season there. Yeah, just with all my work stuff, prepping a lot of stuff for Roll20 is tough, and making sure it's stream quality is tough. And I've also got a lot of miniatures in my basement that have been begging to be painted. So, and WoW Classic came out. I mean, I only have so many spoons now.
All right. So before we call it, just a few quick announcements. Those of you who maybe have noticed on the NoDirectionPodcast.com, we have had many fantastic guest bloggers for this week and next week. We have none of our usual bloggers will be seen. We have replaced all the blogs with guest blogs from many great members of the community to bring you some unique content. So go check that out this week and next week. You will be surprised. And don't be too surprised if you see some of those names sticking around. Beyond that, speaking of conventions, if you're going to be at PAX Unplugged, you might very well see several members of No Direction there. Me and Vanessa will certainly be there. James might be there. And Luis will be there too, but he's going to be wearing a blue shirt instead of a black shirt, so we can't claim him that time. Alex, do you think you'll be popping in for a day or two?
I have to double check my schedule to make sure it's all good, but I mean, I live in Philadelphia. I feel like it would be really weird if I didn't show up.
It seems a little weird if you didn't show up.
So we don't have anything, we don't have any events, we're not co-hosting any streams with Paizo or anything this time. We're just going to be there as fans, and there might be things that happen. You definitely want to pay attention to our social media channels and stuff, because I'm going to have a camera, and we tend to talk into the internet a lot, so do pay attention when we're out there. I'm looking forward to going to a convention that I'm not working. Will be an interesting experience. It'll be the first time in a decade.
You're wonderful.
What is this not working at a, huh?
I know, right?
And here, I just bought a travel case for my mic, so who knows?
Ooh, indeed. Maybe we'll do something. Who knows? Either way, everyone, we hope to see you all there. Again, if you want to find more fantastic content such as this, you want to check out NoDirectionPodcast.com, where you'll find this podcast. You'll find No Direction Prime, our Pathfinder podcast, where we do much of the same things. That's with me and Ryan Costello. You'll also find our two actual play podcasts, which are fantastic, one of which is GM'd by Vanessa Hoskins, which is Stellar, which is a ridiculously hilarious playthrough of Against the Aeon
Throne. It is amazing. It is amazing.
We had a three stack caravan charge with a which involved a bear who was ridden by a rage bug ridden by a skittermander who very ineffectually charged the Aeon guard, and that was not so successful.
I can't believe I let you do that.
I want to point out, as silly as it sounds, I did save that man's life.
I'm pretty sure I have the strength score to back that up, V.
I just wasn't sure if the water elemental fight was the highlight, or all of the jokes that sprung from it after were the bigger highlight.
Oh my gosh. You're leaving me in puddles, let me tell you what. There was just a stream of jokes.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
I mean, I was whipping, weeping so
good
much.
Good day.
I was dripping at the end.
This
okay?
is
it was
why
like
Ryan promoted
link.
You, isn't it? The puns.
Yep. Oh, he loves puns.
All right. And speaking of another podcast you all want to check out is Avengerous, which is normally our journey through the War for the Crown as a Pathfinder First Edition game. But right now, for the next few weeks, will be a Pathfinder 2 side quest called Mimits 11, which is what's going on besides the War for the Crown in the middle of Apara right now, involving a kobold, a giant spider, a Otyug, a hobgoblin, and a lizard man, which for some reason makes sense, I'm sure. If you want to check that podcast out, it'll be for the next few weeks on our Monday channel. You will have many a great fun. And of course, you'll find the link to our Discord server, which is the chillest community for Pathfinder and Starfinder. Mm-hmm. If you want to just hang out with us and our fans and talk about the games that we love oh so much in a drama-free environment, do come and hang out there. We would love to have you. There are hundreds of fans there, all the cast, some members of the Pazzo staff stop pop in from time to time. It's a great place to chill. And of course, if you want to support further efforts like this, we can only make these shows possible thanks to our Patreon support. So you can find the link at Patreon at nodirectionpodcast.com. It's over on the sidebar. Click there and you can support this and other great efforts. We appreciate everything you are able to do. All right. Anything else before we sign off, gang?
Volpera. Right.
The Volpera.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Until next time, go beyond with no direction.